Well, good morning and welcome to Live Dharma Sunday for June 9th, 2013. I'm Wendy Shinyo Haylett, a Bright Dawn lay minister inducted in May of 2009 with the second lay ministry class. I will be your host for today and the following three Sundays. So it's a beautiful sunny morning here in Rochester after many days of rain. It's June. And it's very green. Now, in April in Rochester, it's just beginning to get a hint of light new green. It gives us some hope after the endless days of a Rochester winter. But by June, the greens of the evergreens, the maples, the bushes, and grasses continue to deepen in color. So it's not a mirage of spring anymore. It's a confirmation that, yes, summer is nearly here. And for that, I say thank you. A little later, I'll talk more about the stuff of summer. But now, let's welcome William Sayle Sheehan, who will present our Dharma Glimpse for today. Sayle lives in Chicago and is a current participant in the Bright Dawn Lay Minister Group 6. Who will complete the program in the spring of 2014. Sayle, whose Bright Dawn lineage name means fierce sun, is retired from the Army. He's a martial arts practitioner and a poet. He studied Buddhism in the Thai, Chinese, and Japanese traditions. He's active with the Buddhist Temple of Chicago, which was established in 1944 by our Dharma grandfather, Reverend Guillaume Kobose. And Sayle has aspirations to train and ordain as a Jodo-Shin priest. So for today's immigrant, here's Sayle.
Good morning. Glad to be here with everyone. My Dharma talk this week, I was thinking of their Dharma glimpse. I was thinking about, I was out in the garden, and I was weeding and working on our garden, and been pondering the food cycle, the food chain. In doing so, I was reminded of a line from Walt Whitman's Songs of Myself, which goes, "A child said, what is the grass? Fetching to me with full hands. How could I answer the child? I do not know what it is any more than he." Pondering on this line, I thought was thinking about the chain and how in our industrialized system, we forget where our food comes from. But no matter where it does, it all starts with one energy source, the sun. Last night I had a ribeye steak, and I know where it came from. We ordered, my family gets pasture-raised grass-fed beef from a local farm. We visited the farm, and I can say for certain that in a way, I am eating grass, as I've seen them in the pastures. And the same goes for the milk that we get and the eggs that we get and the chicken. They're all raised on the same farm. The grass itself photosynthesizes and converts solar energy into fuel that the cow eats, and then I eat the cow, chicken, or eggs. In thinking about this, I was thinking about, in Buddhism, we talk about other power. That power that is external to yourself, but is also within you. Our physical energy comes from the sun. It's also outside of us, but the sun is within us. Our spiritual energy comes from the limitless light that the Buddha expounded in the Dharma. So my response to Walt Whitman as a child is this. I am the grass, as are both of you. We are all interconnected. What I eat today will one day be the nutrients for other beings. In the Dharma, what I, my actions and the things that I go forth and do will be the spiritual Dharma and the teachings for others through my own actions, whether it be my children or my Dharma friends or my Sangha or a stranger. So be that sun that shines out on everyone and be that energy source for the Dharma. Thank you. Namo Amida Butsu.
Thank you, Sayle. How wonderful, this reminder that the proof of interdependence and interconnectedness is all around us, and that it starts with the sun. It's interesting because the sun is in all of us and in all who share this planet with us, but it's more interesting from a Bright Dawn lineage perspective. Each of us are given the name, given the sun as a part of our name. The yo in all of our names means sun. And as I mentioned earlier, boy, am I grateful for the sun, not just the sun of summer, but the boundless spiritual sun of other power, connecting us and holding us in all its limitless compassion and shining the light of wisdom on us so we can find our way. Also, hearing Sayo's glimpse and thinking about Walt Whitman and Song of Myself and what that writing means to me, I actually think it's one of the most amazing pieces of spiritual writing. But I think most when I think of Song of Myself, I think of the first verse, because the first three lines speak exactly to Sayo's theme of interdependence. He writes, I celebrate myself, and what I assume, you shall assume, for every atom belongs to me as good as belongs to you. And then his next two lines, the fourth and fifth lines, paint a picture of summer and ease. I loaf and invite my soul. I lean and loaf at my ease, observing a spear of summer grass. Loafing, observing a spear of summer grass, lying on the grass, watching the clouds. That's, to me, that's summer. But also, summer is baseball. I love baseball. Absolutely adore baseball. When April comes and the season starts, it's just another reason I rejoice in the return of spring. Of course, I love the new green and the warming temperatures and the daffodils and the buds of the, you know, new leaves on the trees. But, boy, the return of baseball makes everything more exciting. Al Gallagher, a baseball player in the 70s, wrote that there are three things in life which he really loved. He said, God, my family, and baseball. But he also said there's one little problem. Once baseball season starts, he changes the order around a little bit. Now, baseball doesn't possess me like I know it does some people, but I do watch or listen to a game almost every day during the season, and sometimes two games a day. I rarely miss a Cleveland Indians game. As a Cleveland fan, as anyone who may follow baseball already knows, being an Indians fan gives the season a little extra edge, a lot more drama, and invariably a lot of disappointment. But for me, watching baseball is meditative. When you're watching a baseball game, there's a lot of time to reflect. The season itself is long, from April to October, and the games can be very long. In a good pitcher's duel, there can be a long time between an offensive play and the roar of the crowd. You can fall asleep watching a game in the fourth inning and wake up in the eighth without missing a hit or a score. Baseball gives you a lot of time to reflect. And, well, just loaf, which most of us don't do nearly enough. Bill Veeck, a former Cleveland Indians owner and the one credited for integrating the American League when he signed Larry Doby in 1947, said of baseball that it is a game to be savored, not gulped. Like life, it's so much better when you're not thinking about getting somewhere or achieving something, but letting life itself lead you, responding to things as they are, as they present themselves, not as you plan them to be or would like them to be. You know, one of the most important lessons I think that baseball teaches us is the spirituality of imperfection. In a story in the book by that name, The Spirituality of Imperfection, Storytelling and the Search for Meaning, Ernest Kurtz and Catherine Ketchum, the authors, wrote, baseball alone in sport considers errors to be part of the game, part of its rigorous truth. See, in baseball, errors are tallied and publicized and flashed on the screen for every team and every player. So they are an accepted part of the game. Baseball expects mistakes from its players. And even its most coveted accomplishment, the so-called perfect game, can only be achieved if not only the pitcher is perfect, but his teammates also play perfectly with no errors. Now, in Jodo and Shin Buddhism, it teaches us that we are bamboo. We're imperfect. It is our nature to make mistakes. We are not perfect players. We make errors. But it's okay, because that is who we are. And as David Brazier Sensei says, I'm not okay, you're not okay, and that is perfectly okay. So thankfully, our errors are counted and published in the morning newspaper every day. But there's more to baseball, to me, that models the Dharma very, very closely. I'll use the three marks of existence that we learn in the Dharma as the three bases. So we, as Buddhists, try to come to an understanding of the so-called three marks of existence. They are impermanence, number one, unsatisfactoriness, number two, and a lack of a discrete self or a lack of a discrete I as number three. Those will be the three bases I'll talk about. So these three marks characterize the interconnectedness, interdependence, impermanence, and change that we accept as followers of the Dharma. So first base is lack of a discrete self. Now, in baseball, as a team sport, it's not just about the pitcher. Even when the pitcher is throwing strikes, if the ball gets away from the catcher or the center field loses a pop-up in the sun, there will be an error, and the hitter could get a base or two bases, or even three bases. The interdependence of baseball is awesome, and then sometimes it seems nearly impossible that all the players and contributing causes and conditions could come together and positively and error-free to score a bunch of runs or have a defensive rule or with a no-hitter or a one-hitter. So like life, no matter how much we try and wish to, it is unlikely we can become a Buddha by ourselves alone. In fact, in truth, we cannot do much of anything by ourselves alone. Self-power can only get us so far. Other power is needed to round the bases and slide into home safely. Now, we've covered first, but second base is unsatisfactoriness. Baseball can break your heart. And in a long season lasting from spring to fall with more than 160 regular games, players and fans alike can go through many, many ups and downs, 11th inning walk-off home runs for victories, and crazy-making, gut-wrenching losses. Now, as a Cleveland fan, I can testify that every spring when the Indians charge to the lead in the Central Division, I'm dreaming of exciting postseason games and a World Series, maybe. Then they hit a period where they always do, where they lose eight games in a row, and I see, yep, this year is going to be just like last year. And I get disappointed, and I decide I don't want to watch another game, but I do. I have hope. I keep going. And then there are those games that you can be sure your team is going to win. Going into the ninth inning, up four runs, and then the opposing team takes the game from you with a last inning, ninth inning, seven-run hitting display. But as Tommy Lasorda said, no matter how good you are, you're going to lose one-third of your games. No matter how bad you are, you're going to win one-third of your games. But it's the other third that makes the difference. Life is like that. Some days you think that this day just couldn't get any better. Just maybe you're in for a great week or a month or a year, but just as quickly, in the next few days, something happens to remind you that life is not perfect, and you just have to keep playing anyway. There will be days where everything will flow and days where nothing works, but we keep playing through the season. Now, third base is impermanence, one of the hardest things to accept, I think. Like a good pitcher, life is constantly changing. It throws you curveballs, sinkers, change-ups, sliders, fastballs, but we have one job to do, and that is we keep hitting until the right pitch comes. We keep fouling them off until we can get a hit. We keep trying, and if we get a hit, then we have to commit to run the bases. If we strike out, we have another chance at bat. In the long season of life and in the long season of baseball, we have to prepare to play through a lot of different weather. Snow at the beginning and end of the season, rain delays and rainouts, blinding sun where outfielders lose the ball, and 100-plus degree temperatures draining our energy. Weather disrupts our plans, brings trees down on our cars and houses, floods our houses, and can even take our lives. But we keep playing through all the changes that nature can throw at us. And, you know, sometimes we get traded. We're no longer a Cleveland Indian, but we're a designated hitter for the New York Yankees. And in life, we rarely stay in the same job, the same company, or live in the same house, or even in the same city or the same state or even in the same country. But we make the best of it and even thrive in the change. Sometimes we're on deck, expectant to hit against the pitcher we've had great success against, and then the opposing team calls a timeout, replaces the pitcher for a left-handed pitcher because he wants a lefty-lefty matchup, and your current batting record against that left-handed pitcher is abysmal. Now, sometimes we steal base and get caught, retiring the side with three outs. And sometimes we get away with it. In our lives, we have all done or said things we shouldn't have or aren't proud of. Sometimes others are aware and call us on them. Sometimes only we know what we've done, and sometimes others do, too, and we're punished by the system, by our parents when we were children, or the legal system as adults. Yet caught, punished or not, we have faith in the transcendent order of life, of karmic action. Whatever we do, we know that our actions cause other actions, and we must be prepared to face the consequences of those actions. The sports writer Paul Gallico wrote that no other game in the world is as tidy and dramatically neat as baseball, with cause and effect, crime and punishment. And back to Bill Veeck again, he says that baseball is an orderly thing in a very unorderly world. If you get three strikes, even the best lawyer in the world can't get you off. So now we've covered three bases, but not home plate. Home plate, to me, is this. No matter what life throws at us, the best we can do, as we bright dawners say, is to keep going. Now, I grew up with three brothers and a father who loved baseball, so I suspect it is what incited my love of the game. But it stirs a deep emotional response of safety, comfort, contentment, and summer. The low-grade hum, baseball crowds on the radio and TV, the rhythm of the play-by-play and color announcers, punctuated by the whistles and cheers. To me, they're like crickets on a warm summer night, or the soothing sound of a gentle rain, or the hum of a Buddhist chant. Speaking of chant, I just found out that there are 108 stitches on a baseball. Did anyone else know that? I certainly didn't. And there are 108 beads on a Buddhist mala. And the 108 is very significant throughout all of Buddhism. So I'll close by echoing the words of the poet Sharon Olds when she says, "Baseball is reassuring. It makes me feel as if the world is not going to blow up." And that's how I feel about baseball. Actually, that's how I feel about Buddhism, too. I think there's much more reason for me to feel that way about Buddhism than there is about baseball. But let's laugh a little, loosen up. Sometimes I think we take ourselves too seriously. Actually, a lot of time, I think we take ourselves too seriously. We take our spirituality too seriously. Sometimes, as Walt Whitman said, the only way to invite our soul is to loaf, observe a blade of grass, or to play ball. So today, go through your day remembering to be happy. Reach out, share, hug, make each day a holiday, and celebrate just living. So thank you all for joining me today on Live Dharma Sunday. I look forward to next Sunday. And go out and smile and play and loaf and maybe play ball. Until next time.